Sure am, Gary.
Brett Kronberger, are you ready behind that glass?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Well, let's go. Start it up.
Call in now to be heard live on the Clean and Sober Radio Show at 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306.
Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock, and welcome to another Clean and Sober Radio Show right here, right now, live on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia. I'm Gary Hendler, along with my co-host, Mark Sigmon. How are you, Mark?
Doing great, Gary. How about those Eagles? That was awesome.
What, Sunday?
Sunday, yep.
This Sunday or
this
last Sunday?
Past Sunday Super Bowl. What?
That's right.
You
they
tuned
won.
In, right?
They
yeah.
won, didn't they?
Yep.
It was great. Okay, good. All right, are we enough with that already?
Yeah,
let's move
I think
on.
We covered it.
Let's move on. But you know what? Let's stick with that for a minute. It's nice in recovery to be able to enjoy other things, such as football games and stuff like that, than the alternative.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about that this week, about being able to enjoy things, and nothing better than the Eagles winning a Super Bowl after 50-something years.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Absolutely. No drugs needed. So Clean and Sober Radio is a nonprofit whose mission is to share and discuss stories of addiction and the roads to recovery. We are dedicated to promoting a lifetime free of alcohol and drugs, and there is recovery. There's plenty of it out there. It's available. We have a lot of great underwriters, but as we say every week, they don't deliver recovery, and there's no drive-throughs in recovery.
Yeah, and we say every week, too, get it at a high bottom. There's this old myth out there that you have to wait till you hit the lowest of low bottoms, but you want to catch it high before you go all the way down.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't have to wait. You know, that's when I was coming up 30 years ago, you got to get to the bottom, you got to be in the gutter, blah, 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 blah. Not true.
Yeah, it's that old myth, you know, and a lot of people believe that. And the truth is there's a lot of function in, you know, people that are holding jobs and things and they're still struggling with addiction problems.
Absolutely. And, you know, Mark, you're a clinical what do you call yourself?
I'm a clinical supervisor. Rehab after work.
Rehab after work, rehab after school. You're one of the underwriters. Great resource. Rehab after work, rehab after school, the Malvern Institute, Humble Beginnings. And there's a lot of them, but you guys have been around 30-some years. I know that because I know who started it. And that says something about your organization.
Yeah, we were probably one of the first to start the intensive outpatient model, you know, where people are coming multiple times a week for group sessions.
Right. So we're asking our audience to check out cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com. You can listen to all the old shows for at least for a year back. You'll get information on all of the resources if you're looking for recovery. And it'll tell you also events that are coming up. It was a lot of information in there. And you, Mark, you put it out every Thursday night. What's going to happen here on Friday?
Yeah, we get hits from all over the world.
We do?
Yeah, a lot of people liking it from different countries, which is cool.
We absolutely do. And, you know, we're a nonprofit. So that means we need money all the time. So I hope our audience would go on the website, cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com, go to the PayPal button and hit it. Donate something. You want to keep listening to this show? Donate something. If it's a dollar, that's great. $5, whatever you can give. We need that money to keep this thing going.
Yeah, and some of that goes to treatment, correct?
Absolutely. We want to be able to help people who want treatment get into facilities if they're short on money or the insurance company's not paying for it. That's what we really want to do here.
Yeah, so it's a great cause, you know. So if you can go on, hit that PayPal button, send a donation, that would be awesome.
Absolutely. We're live. Give us a call, 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. Did I miss anything?
I think you covered it all, Gary.
We did? Okay.
I think so.
Let's get into the show. We got a great show today. We have two people from your organization, Rehab After Work and After School. We have Ned Campbell, Medical Director. He was just waving at me. Yeah, you can wave to the camera. That's right. I forgot where we can sit. Yeah. I'm thinking, radio, what are you doing? You're the Medical Director for Rehab After Work and Rehab After School.
Correct. I'm the medical director for Onward Behavioral Health and the Rehab After Work, Rehab After School is there as well.
So what, in that position, what are some of your responsibilities?
Overall, responsible for all the doctors and basically overseeing how the healthcare is administered amongst all the people that we treat, making sure everyone's getting fair and equal care, and making sure that the care that we're giving people is, you know, the best care, scientific care, evidence-based care, as opposed to doing things that people feel is right, but it's not backed up by science.
That's a big responsibility you have, isn't it?
It is a big responsibility, yeah.
But you're a smart guy.
That's what they keep telling me.
Also with us from Rehab After School and After Work is Tish Dees. And Tish, you are a quality assurance specialist.
Yes.
All right. Can you explain to our audience what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really happy to be on the show. I appreciate you guys having us out today, this week. So my responsibility as quality assurance is I'm kind of behind the scenes clinical care. So making sure that documentation is up to par with the standards of what we need to. But I also have a clinical background. So I've been with the company a little over 5 years, and I worked as the clinical supervisor for Rehab After Work, and I also run their young adult intensive outpatient program in the evening, again at the Exton location. So definitely excited to be a part of some of these topics and just really making sure that you know, people know about our services and what we're here to support and offer to the communities. It's so great to have multiple locations throughout our company. So we definitely want to be able to meet the needs of the community and provide resources to the families and know that help's available.
That's great. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Brad Reese. Brad, is the phone someone calling us? Is that what we're doing here? Brad's handling all the visuals on the show now.
Facebook and, Live.
Facebook Live, man. I hope we look all right.
Yeah, I hope so. Did you bring your comb today?
A comb? Do people still have combs?
I guess so, right?
Do you have a comb? Do you use a comb?
I combed my hair, yeah.
Before you did comb your hair. That must have been a strong comb because if you didn't notice, there's no hair left.
It's a good comb.
It's a good comb.
Yeah, it's a good comb. I got it on Amazon.
Did you really, Doc? All right, good.
I did.
All right, so let's get into some of this stuff. I want to get into some questions that we had asked of us during the week that were emailed to us and sent. And I think we have a very eclectic variety of information at this table right now. So let's start off with Jody from Birmingham, Alabama.
Birmingham,
Deep South. How bad is the current opioid epidemic in comparison to other drug epidemics in the past?
It's beyond bad. I mean, there was a heroin epidemic like outside of New York in the early 70s, and you know, when people coming back from Vietnam, et cetera. But the numbers are just unbelievably astounding. I mean, in Philadelphia last year, close to, I believe it was like 1,200 people died of overdose.
Yeah, that's just reported deaths.
Yeah, and across the country, you know, it was close to 70 or 80,000 people.
Yeah, just reported.
Yeah.
Numbers now are staggering. Even we're close to 100,000. We will be this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's surpassed all kinds of things. I believe motor vehicle accidents.
Oh, yeah. Murders. Everything.
Yeah. And it's horrible. I mean, it's as bad as it can get. And we're seeing it all the time. People struggling, you know, getting hooked on painkillers, then kind of going up the ladder and starting to use heroin eventually. And then now fentanyl, which we'll talk about later, comes into the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can remember coming up, you know, when I was done in 82 using, before that, it was freebasing, it was all these different narcotics, but people weren't dying at any rate close to what it is now.
Oh yeah, and you know, a lot of the young adult population, I'm sure Tashara can talk on that, the young adult population, it's really, really hit badly, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. From a from an experience running a young adult program, I would say the vast majority of the clients that I worked with, and I know across all of our locations that have this specific specialty program with the young adults, is that this is, you know, by far the most reoccurring presenting issue that we're seeing is that opiate dependent. And people, many are coming in and reporting that they've had overdoses. Unfortunately, someone's been around to, you know, either call or families have had Narcan available. And so definitely an epidemic that we're seeing, and especially with those young adults.
Dr. Campbell.
Yes.
Question. What percentage of the patients that you see that come into your facility are hooked on opiates basically without anything else?
So it'd be tough to say exactly how many our facility specifically from opiates, but I definitely know nationwide, as the CDC reported, 66% of people who are dying from drug overdoses involves opiates. So it's a substantial number of patients that are coming in are on opiates. That's like the number one drug. Before, I mean, not even that long ago, I'd say like 15 years ago, it was all about cocaine and crack and getting people off that.
Yeah.
And now the tide has totally turned. Since about 99, when OxyContin hit the market, everything has changed. The number of deaths from opiates alone has quadrupled from 1999 to 2010. I mean, it's at a rate that is unprecedented. It's to the point now where even the dogs at Border Patrol, like where the ships come in, the dogs have to get Narcan as well because they're sniffing out where the fentanyl is, and the dogs are overdosing just from sniffing the fentanyl. The dogs have to get hit with Narcan as well. So it's really bad.
I mean, you know, speaking of pharmaceutical companies, it's criminal. It's absolutely criminal, and they knew it from the beginning what they were doing. Thank goodness now the state governments are sort of pushing away the federal government in trying to deal with this situation, because the federal government is basically doing nothing now. And you know, we were talking before we went on the air that to have Kellyanne Conway be a, in quotes, drug czar is a joke. And she along with the administration, with the Trump administration, has pushed away all professionals, external professionals that would have some input into this horrible epidemic. They pushed them away, and now they're using people inside the White House to direct this program of trying to combat the opioids. It's absurd.
Yeah, letting politics get into it way too much, right? And also kind of bringing up the old war on drugs, which, you know, we've seen has not really worked too well at this point. And it would be nice to see more, you know, money thrown at treatment and getting people better.
Yeah. I mean, how can you comprehend that a little town in West Virginia with, I don't think, 23,000 people, there has been how many millions of pills have gone into that into that neighborhood?
Yeah, it's absolutely awful.
So where are they going? Where are these pills going? I mean, these people aren't consuming all this. I mean, millions of pills. Well, Randall is, but I'm talking about the regular people that live there.
Yeah, there was actually just a documentary we were discussing, and you know, which Dr. Campbell had been talking about earlier. It's really been a scourge down there, hasn't it?
Yeah, there was a piece by 60 Minutes with the drug enforcement agencies responsible for kind of controlling these situations where the distributors of the pills like OxyContin and Percocet go to these small towns with only a few thousand people, and those towns are basically flooded with millions and millions of pills. And on the face of it, it makes no sense. Like, why would a town this small need so many pills unless it's being diverted for other use? And the DEA was trying to attack these distributors, but then they got blocked by basically the federal government after they passed legislation stating that it was, in a way, illegal to go after these distributors because you're preventing these pills from getting to people with pain.
Was under the Obama administration.
Which was under the Obama administration.
It's surprising to me.
Yeah, it passed through the House, it passed through the Senate without any problems at all. At the time, it was Tom Marino, another senator from Tennessee, who wrote the bill. And shortly after the piece aired, I think the next day, Tom Marino pulled out from being the drug czar.
Right. Yeah. And has not been replaced.
No. So it's Kellyanne Conway right now, which is scary.
Scary, which is very scary. You know, let's do this. Let's take it. It's almost a quarter after. Let's take our first break, and we'll be back with all the folks from Rehab After Work and After School. When we get back, call us 1-888-329-3306. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Governor Tom Wolf. Thousands of families across Pennsylvania have been affected by the opioid epidemic. Together, we can fight this disease. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, help is available. Visit pa.gov/opioids for resources and information on substance abuse. For treatment options, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Brought to you by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, Governor. Paid for with Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars.
My story begins here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in the Hill District. I was the oldest of seven children and was raised by my mom and stepfather. Growing up, my stepfather was very abusive to us. It wasn't until I moved out that I began having parties and drinking alcohol. Throughout my 20s and 30s, I tried whatever drugs were available. I became addicted to heroin, which drove me to theft, and I was in and out of rehab and prison. 25 years have passed since then, and I am a different person, a rehabilitated person. While looking for a part-time job in senior housing, I was afraid my past would interfere with this task. I was desperate for help. Thankfully, I learned about a pardon. During the pardoning process, I remained patient and worked on myself. I even worked with people who went through the same substance abuse issues that I had gone through. Through 4 years of hard work, along with the help of friends and loved ones, I was granted a pardon and finished an old chapter of my life. I am now a 65-year-old woman where my past no longer hinders my present. My name is Carol Ramsey, and I finished my pathway to pardons.
Hi, I'm Lieutenant Governor Mike Stock, Chairman of the Board of Pardons. After applying to the Pennsylvania Board of Pardons, Carol Ramsey was pardoned of crimes she committed by Governor Tom Wolf in May 2016. Ms. Ramsey of Pittsburgh can now seek to have her convictions wiped clean, allowing her to move into government housing and apply for other jobs once she retires. Both of these avenues were blocked because of her previous life of crime. If you're looking for a chance at redemption, like Carol Ramsey, take a small step you can call your own with a clemency application to the Board of Pardons. Submit your application now for a potential pardon of your criminal record at bop.pa.gov.
I'm Lisa Thomas-Laurie, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm asking that you listen, too.
Hi, this is Brett Butler. You're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
I was 13 years old when I tasted my first high.
Keep it going, Brett.
I was 13 years old when I rolled up that first high.
All right, you dropping it down? Brett, you are really talented, you know that?
I was doing the drums and the guitar.
Both. Incredible.
That bubble is quite a happening place, huh?
It certainly is. And Randall's back there directing this whole thing.
So Randall's playing the flute.
He's playing the flute.
Even though there's no flute in the song.
Yeah, I don't know if there is or isn't, but that's our good buddy Ricky Bird. with Clean Getaway, the new CD. And Ricky used to be formerly of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Yeah, many years of recovery now.
Many years. Great guitar player. I saw a picture of him and Paul McCartney recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember he wasn't telling us a story about Paul McCartney on the air once?
I guess, he's a very interesting guy, and he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was inducted, I guess, about 3 years ago.
Yeah, and his new album is definitely awesome. It's definitely good.
Every song on there is good. Ricky Berg, Clean Getaway. Okay, we are back with Dr. Ned Campbell, MD, and Trishera.
Close, Tishera.
I gotta just call you Trish.
Whatever
Tish,
works.
I mean, Deese. Deese and Doze, right?
Yes.
Yeah. From rehab after work and after school, you guys provide a great service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the proof is you've been around for so long. And my pal here, Mark, always gives us each week, you know, updates on what's going on, new stuff that's going on at the... I don't like to say facility. It sounds like a prison. At the rehab.
Yeah, yeah, we got all kinds of good stuff going on. Partials opening up with, you know, where somebody comes in 6 hours a day, basically 5 days a week, and learns all kinds of stuff and does all kinds of activities like yoga and meditation.
Yeah,
and
it's good.
Lots of good recovery stuff.
That's good. You know, again, in the old days, you know, you should have been in a rehab that was like hard labor. I know somebody who in the 70s went to Gaudenzia House in Philadelphia.
I've heard stories,
and they would put people out on Girard Avenue wearing pig hats, and that was a way to humble them. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Good old tough love. That was kind of the old, that was the old model going there. And I've heard a lot of those stories too.
And now there are rehabs that are absolutely nicer than any hotels I've ever stayed in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm treating it as a disease at this point, hopefully, right?
As they should. Okay, Patty. And she says she is 71 years old from Dallas, Texas. How does a person get hooked on opiates? How does that process work, if you want to call it a process, Doc?
Yeah, so the basic approach people like to look at it, people, places, and things, right? So the things, namely, would be drugs. And the way drugs work is depending on the potency of the drug, the route of administration, whether you're smoking it, injecting it, or swallowing it, has a lot to do with if you become addicted. Of course, the drug, the hot topic now is heroin or opiates. So typically someone will start off with opiates, they get a pain prescription or their buddy gives them a pain pill, they swallow it. Then they advance to chewing it and then swallowing it. And what chewing it does is, and not promoting this in any way, but what chewing it does is it allows it to be released faster. So instead of the pill dissolving on its own, it's already dissolved and you already get that high sensation. And then you move on to injecting. And what injecting does, it bypasses the body's natural filter, the liver, and goes straight to the money spot, the brain. And so it depends on the type of drug that you're using. So if you're using something like Percocet and you're taking it by mouth, it's not as potent as if you're using something like heroin, you're shooting it, or morphine. Ironically, heroin was designed, as the name implies, heroes for soldiers of war who have pain issues, and they wanted something less addicting than morphine, ironically enough, and they came up with heroin. And the way heroin works is it passes the blood-brain barrier faster. That filter that your brain naturally has to keep some of the bad stuff out, it goes through that faster to give you that high sensation much faster. And if you ask any neuroscientist what part of the brain is crucial in doing this, they would say the nucleus accumbens. And that's just a fancy word for the part of your brain that is responsible for reinforcing particular behavior. Stuff like eating cheesesteaks, which are delicious, having sex, which everyone enjoys. But the drive to use a substance overrides all that. So your desire for cheesesteaks, the desire to make love, is overridden by using drugs because it is so much more potent than the natural stimulus of eating food or anything like that.
And you can see it on a brain scan these days too, right?
Yeah, they have a thing called PET scans. And basically what PET scans show is glucose in the brain. And basically, initially when you take the drug, your brain may light up. But then after a while, certain parts of your brain don't light up. And those parts of your brain that don't light up are the front part of your brain, which you'd call, you know, executive function. traditionally you think about executive function, you think of a president. Now I don't really think of a president that much anymore. But you think that's the part of your brain that controls you from doing stupid stuff. When you're younger, it's not fully developed until you're like mid-20s. So you think, you know, you're 18, you're grown. You're still not really grown yet until about your mid-20s, your brain. That's when you have full executive function and you can make, you know, decisions. I guess the car companies know that because you can't rent a car until you're like 25, right?
Yeah.
So after that time is when you can start, you know, your brain is, they'd say your brain is fully functioning. But what drugs do is it hijacks that. So all of your motivation and learning and desire and craving goes to using drugs as opposed to finding food, you know, finding a job and things like that. So it's actually a brain disease where your brain, there are, I mean, to put it simply, there are mechanisms in your brain that are downregulated in the when you use drugs. So you use less of the front part of your brain and you're kind of using more of your reptilian brain and reacting to the environment and trying to acquire drugs and substances to get by. That brings up a point where people think it's like more of a moral issue where like you just use drugs because you're a bad person. If you talk to anyone down like K&A at the Boulevard or anywhere like that where people are using drugs, they tell you they want to get off drugs. They don't want to do this anymore, but they feel horribly sick when they're not on it. And they have an awful, awful compulsion to use it. Everyone they know is using drugs. Everywhere they go, people are using drugs. And those kind of triggers that anyone talks about in a recovery room or place is what brings them back to using drugs. So places like where I work, rehab after work, our goal is to kind of take them out of that environment and give them the supports needed and possibly medication to help prevent them from continuing using drugs.
Let's talk a little bit about medications that at least give a patient time for their brains to, I guess, get rewired or adjust. So drugs like
Suboxone.
Those kind of drugs. Is your organization supportive? Because I remember several years ago, many of the rehabs, you couldn't be on anything.
Yeah.
And I think now people are understanding people need to have that kind of support while they're going through this early process of recovery.
Yeah, I mean, just from where we've come from, abstinence is king. If you talk to anyone, any lay person off the street would tell you that if you want to stop using drugs, if you want to stop drinking, if you want to stop smoking cigarettes, you just need to stop doing it. You need to be tough. You need resolve and things like that, or you're just not a good person if you can't stop. We know that that's not true. There are plenty of good people, well-meaning people, kids, you know, parents, executives. Recently, there was that doctor from NYU who overdosed on Percocet or something like that just the other day. So all these people, they, you know, they're very well-to-do, knowledgeable people who end up on substances. And it's really, you know, it's not a moral issue. It's because the drug is that potent where it would make them do things they never would normally do. So drugs like Suboxone and Methadone and now Trexone, they give people the chance to get away from that culture, get away from that lifestyle, you know, get from under the bridge and into places where they're offered services. They have a social worker, they can get job coaching, they can get a therapist, they can get a psychiatrist to help them do that. We started in the 60s with methadone. The way methadone works is it's a lot like heroin, but it stays in your system longer. So someone starts methadone, they need to be up to about 80 milligrams to 120 milligrams for maintenance. Anything lower than that, typically they can't maintain, they end up relapsing. When they're up around, you know, 80 to 120 milligrams, they're able to maintain a regular lifestyle. They're not going to feel like they're chronically in withdrawal. Because you guys know, when you're in withdrawal, it's like you have the flu. Recently, there was a recent flu epidemic. Everyone was sick. Imagine if you felt like that all the time, every day, if you didn't take this one thing. And if you took this one thing, your flu would go away. What would you do, right? I mean, chances are most people are going to end up taking that thing to avoid having the flu. And what Suboxone and methadone does is offers people the opportunity to get out of that precarious situation they find themselves in and find some recovery and get some time. Because if you quit today, you're going to feel terribly sick for the next 3 days, like you have the flu, and then you're into a phase which we call protracted abstinence. And during that period of time, you're still going to feel kind of queasy, sick, dizzy, you know, lightheaded, upset stomach, terribly anxious. And that could last a minimum 6 months. It could last up to a year. So imagine if someone in that situation, what are they to do? Abstinence alone won't do it. I know plenty of people who have found recovery through abstinence. They, you know, they have an extraordinary network of family and friends. They were able to get recovery in places like, you know, Living Room, which you talked about before, or, you know, rehab after work without any other substance, without any, you know, medication assisted. But that is really a minority of people. You know, 50%, I don't want to throw out numbers, but a large amount of people who abstain will relapse. The relapse rates are absurd. So to think that people are going to get sober on their own, the numbers are very, very, very small.
You know, what you're saying is very logical. Unfortunately, this isn't a logical situation. You know, I it's very scary. I can say this because I am in recovery. It's very scary to get out of that whole world and go into recovery. There's so many unknowns. There are, you know, a lot of people feel like everybody's passed them by anyway, so what's the sense? So it's logical, but it's a hard thing to sell somebody to get into treatment. I mean, it really is. I was terrified. Mark, did you have fears?
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, it's like you're changing everything. And, you know, you talk about people, places, and things, and all your friends use. And then it's like, hey, who do you hang out with? And it's very scary. I mean, it's your whole life. It's like I've heard it described as being, you know, a fish out of water early on in recovery. And it's extremely hard early on to make those changes because as addicts, we're creatures of very rigid routines. And, you know, you take the addiction and the obsession and compulsion and the rituals, and you know, it's the biggest change you'll ever make in your entire life is quitting drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's you know, I was when you were talking, Doc, I was thinking of this. You know, so you give somebody some assisted medication for a period of time, not forever, and it gives them time to adjust in every different way, physically, socially, and everything else. So it's like a type 2 diabetic takes medication, okay? Doesn't have to take it for life if they would just reorient themselves to a different lifestyle while they're using this medication. They can be off of it.
Well, you know, it's, you know, best case scenario in some cases that is the case. Now, I've worked with quite a few people that, you know, for instance, they were on Suboxone and they were tapered down to an extremely low milligram and they stayed on it. Now, right. People might roll their heads and say, hey, what's going on? But they're, you know, they were able to hold their jobs down. They weren't going out and overdosing and dying. And you know, it can be used that way, too, just like if somebody has heart disease or diabetes. Would you agree, Doc?
I agree. The diabetes example is a perfect example because diabetes is often related to eating habits. What you're eating oftentimes will give you diabetes. You're eating like high calorie foods, heavy in sugar and things like that. You end up being a type 2 diabetic. The thing I would say about that though is there really is no cutoff date. I wouldn't say in 6 months you're going to be off Suboxone, in a year you'll be off Suboxone. Because just like type 2 diabetes, which I know, you know, I have family members with type 2 diabetes, okay, all you have to do is not eat sugar and your blood sugar will go down and you can get off this pill. That never happens. You know, so, and you're talking about a drug that is more potent than sugar. The use of it is more reinforced than sugar. People will go without eating when it comes to heroin. So it's difficult. You can't just say someone's going to, you know, do 2 months on Suboxone and then they're going to be clean. It's really up to the individual. Some people will be on it for weeks, months. Other people will be on it for years. But the idea is they're not out there in the streets. They're not spreading disease. They're not getting hepatitis B or C. They're not getting HIV. They're not stealing. They're not engaging in like this illegal activity. And, you know, but they're contributing to society. If you give someone Suboxone, it is a dramatic change in their demeanor and how they function in life. Same thing with methadone. Methadone also works wonders, but the problem with methadone is you have to go to a methadone center. The center has precarious hours. You can only take so many home a week. It's difficult. So for people who are functioning on a level where Suboxone makes sense, it's very, very efficacious.
We're going to take a break now. When we get back, I want to talk about the clean injection sites, which is a hot topic right now. Brett, take us to commercial. Founded in 1948, the Malvern Institute continues to be a leader in the field of addiction treatment, now offering two inpatient treatment centers in Malvern and Willow Grove, Pennsylvania, as well as counseling centers throughout the Tri-County area. The Malvern Institute, a respected presence in the field. They provide an individual-based model of clinical care coupled with the 12-step approach and then followed by continued engagement and support for at least 90 days. Please call or visit to arrange help for yourself or a loved one. Call 866-455-8732. You are going to be able to speak to one of their trained professional admission staff members. Courtesy transportation can be provided as well. Most major insurances are also accepted. For more information, we urge you to visit them. You can go to their website, www.malverninstitute.com, and follow them on Facebook. The Malvern Institute, providing a foundation for lifelong recovery since 1948. Call 866-455-8732. That's 866-455-8732. Call today.
This is Joe Leibowitz, founder and CEO of Humble Beginnings Recovery Centers. Did you know that 4 out of 5 heroin users' addictions stem from prescription misuse? Here at Humble Beginnings Recovery Centers, we treat people as more than a statistic. Humble Beginnings takes traditional drug and alcohol treatment out of hospital settings and into comfortable family home environment. Humble Beginnings also offers flexible lengths of stay for clients based on their individual needs. Call one of our admissions counselors today for a confidential phone assessment at 856-336-5806. That's 856-336-5806.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure. I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma?
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
Addiction to alcohol and or drugs often has serious medical, occupational, educational, familial, psychological, and social consequences. Fortunately, there is a place you can go with the help you need and deserve. Rehab After Work, your substance abuse experts, are a licensed intensive outpatient drug and alcohol treatment provider, which has been helping addicted individuals find recovery for well over 2 decades. They can provide individualized treatment programs so that people can get the help they need on an outpatient basis and continue to work. Their staff of highly trained professionals include certified addictions counselors and licensed professional counselors with specialized training in the treatment of addiction. Their staff is dedicated to helping people that are struggling with chemical dependency. For confidential and immediate help, please call 1-800-238-HELP or visit their website, rehabafterwork.com. Again, that's 1-800-238-HELP or rehabafterwork.com. Start your path to recovery today. Rehab After Work is a member of Onward Behavioral Health.
Hi, this is Chet Negron, formerly of Three Dog Night, and you are listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, man, this is Ricky Bird, former member of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, an inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as of 2015, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio, and so do my friends here, right?
Call in now to be heard live on the Clean and Sober Radio Show at 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. Neil Young with Needle.
Still can't believe you just discovered that song, Gary.
Love it, man. Hey, we got some responses after we said we're going to give some cars away. The first response was from your wife. She wants a Matchbox car.
That might not be good.
So
okay.
You go buy for her, right?
I'll stop at Toys R Us on the way home.
Judy Lerner called in, sent a message. Judy, the phone number here is 1-888-329-3306. So let's talk about these clean injection sites. There's going to be a lot of pushback. It's you know, listen, we're in a horrible, horrible epidemic, and I think this will help in some way. I just don't know how much, but I can assure you that nobody wants it in their neighborhood, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, myself, just personally, I'll just speak from my personal, you know, experience. I'm in full agreement that that something needs to be done regarding clean injection sites, because, you know, we're treating a disease. We got to bring medical down there. You know, the people that are using have lost control. They can't stop. And why not save some lives, right? And I don't know if you'd like to speak on that, Doc. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, we've tried it. We've tried it the punitive way. We've been through the war on drugs, and I grew up in the 80s. I've been through the DARE program and all that. The reality is these things don't work. To expect someone to go from using something that essentially is better than food and sex and just ask them to stop, it's cold turkey, you can do it, it's ridiculous. And for some people, it is, because there's plenty of stuff that the community has. There's methadone, there's Suboxone, there's Naltrexone, there's therapy, there's NA, AA, CA, all these things people can use. But if you're at the point where you're still under the bridge, you're still by the tracks, you're using every day, you're getting your needles from the guy next to you who has God knows what, the best option that we have for you is to use these clean injection sites. My good friend, colleague in Canada, in Vancouver, they're actually doing a step beyond clean injection. They're offering hydromorphone, because actually to get a clean source of heroin is actually difficult. You have to get it from Switzerland, blah, 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 a lot of issues. But they're actually offering basically a heroin substitute for people to inject on the site there. And what you get with clean injection sites is you're basically injecting your drug in a clinic versus under a bridge. So you're going to have access to counselors, access possibly to physicians, access to medical care. You know, if you have an abscess, they can help treat your abscess and things like that. Where you're not getting that under the bridge. And by being punitive, sending people to jail, telling people it's bad, it hasn't helped. We've been doing that for the past, you know, century.
You know, I think a lot of people don't understand that part of the program of clean injection sites is the possibility to get treatment. Mm-hmm. It's not just going in to shoot up. Tish, what do you think about it? I mean,
yeah. So I think given the circumstance and kind of the hot topic of what we're talking about, I think that it's important to have a solution that makes sense based on what we're seeing. And I really appreciate the resources to counseling, the resources to medical care, definitely something that somebody isn't always going to get in some of these circumstances that we've described. So, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes.
It definitely will be. You know, I want to just bring up something. You know, I know we're doing good work here with this show. You know, there are a lot of people who are listening to this show who are not in recovery and don't need to be in recovery. It's a source of information for them. Maybe they have a friend or whatever. And I just want to acknowledge that Steve Feinberg, a good buddy of mine, who you know, doesn't need to listen to this show, listens. And we really appreciate it, Steve. From Armin Chevrolet, I'll give you that, all right? I just want to bring that out. It's nice to know that there is interest outside of the recovery or addicted community.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And it's just great to get the education out there. And so people, because a lot of people will encounter somebody that has a problem and can know what to do at that point.
Yeah. So with the clean injection sites, so what do you tell somebody in the neighborhood, say, oh, that's a great idea, but not in my neighborhood? Well, it's got to be in some neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, the question really is, if your loved one was sick and there was something that could be done to help treat their sickness, would you do it? And how close to your house would you want that? If the plan was to open a chemo center down the street from your grandmom who has cancer, I don't think anyone would be too upset about it. It's just the years, you know, centuries possibly of stigma that's associated with heroin and substances of abuse, which in most part is just invented by us. There's nothing inherently bad about drugs, alcohol, tobacco. It's really, it comes down to the user, how it's used, and the end effects. But inherently, there's nothing bad about it. It's that thing that we place on it that makes it bad. So if you can treat somebody if my brother was suffering from an addiction and there was going to be a center, down the street or wherever that he had access to, I would prefer that. Because the thing with clean injection sites is that people don't realize is if you go there and you shoot up and you overdose, they have Narcan on site and they can save you. Back in 2004, they did a study in Australia where they saved over 300 people that year from overdoses because they were at the clean injection site when they were potentially overdosing and they got Narcan. I mean, these sites they save millions of dollars because those people typically end up in the ER and cost, ER visit isn't cheap if anyone's ever been there for, just stitches. But imagine if you're going after an overdose and, you're on vents and ICU stay and all these things cost, after, a few hundred people, it's millions and millions of dollars.
And these people aren't paying the bill either.
And we're paying the bill. Right. So the same people that are throwing their arms up about it are the same people that are upset about how high the taxes are and everything like that. But it's really the solution to the problem. And it's not, and these clean injection sites, it's not going to be, I wouldn't imagine a stampede of users coming there. It's more people that this is really like, I can't stop. I need somewhere safe to use my drugs. I don't want to die. Because that for most people, that's the issue. They don't want to die. They don't want to feel sick. It's not that they're just going there to hang out and shoot up and play Madden or anything like that. It's there because they want a place where they're not going to die, because that's the risk. Most people are shooting up in someone's house, on a couch, or in places like that, and they're not being paid any mind when they nod off and potentially die. They want to go somewhere where they feel safe.
When somebody comes into rehab after work or after school and they're obviously visibly stoned and high, how do you treat them? Are they welcomed into that program, or do they have to go to detox first? Or do you detox there?
So we do not have an outpatient-based detox, but we do have a lot of resources that we can connect them with. So in the event that somebody is motivated to get sober, there are certain circumstances where we would treat them on an outpatient basis from the door. In some circumstances, we might make a referral to an inpatient residential setting where we would recommend somebody goes through the detox process. So I really think a lot of factors would play into that: motivation, drive, motivation for medicated-assisted treatment, whether that's something that they're open to. Certainly if somebody came in and motivated and they wanted to, pursue an abstinence sobriety base, getting detoxed might be, the approach that we would encourage. With a detox setting, a medical setting, you're going to get that 24-hour a day kind of care and comfort meds to assist in some of these symptoms that we've talked about that come as a result of withdrawal. And so that might be more attractive
because,
to somebody.
Because there's always the risk when somebody comes to a place, when they are directed to some other place, they're lost.
Sure. Yeah. And you're very, you hit the nail on the head. That's definitely, sometimes that motivation is like, I'm here and this is the only place I'm willing to do any kind of work.
Right.
Sometimes even getting them to that point is twisting, an arm and a leg. So sometimes we, we'll work with individuals. It really is a case by case basis, but we want to do what we can to meet an individual where they're at. And as an organization, I think we do a really good job at that. They're going to build a relationship and a rapport with a clinician, and we're going to evaluate them in the circumstance. So we'll do what makes sense for that individual, for sure.
That's great. We have a caller on the line, Eddie Moe. Eddie, you there?
Hey, Eddie.
Yes, I am. Yes,
what's
I am.
Up?
Hey, guys.
What's up?
Oh, man. Hey, Doc, how you doing? How's everybody?
Good. How you doing?
All right. I'm listening, and I just got to say, I've never heard such more tremendous knowledge than Doc, what you're talking about right now. Gary and Mark know what I do. I literally walk the streets of Kensington and talk to the kids, and it's amazing. I see them. Regarding the safe injection houses, I see the kids right in front of me. I get out of my car, they put a needle in their body, and they pass out right there. They get into an ambulance, and I never know if they lived. And so everything you're saying is so on point. And what's interesting, I also talked to some of the kids. Most kids are heroin addicts, but I talked to a ton of kids who are saying, hey, I'm down here. How you doing? They said, well, I'm down here because they have a methadone clinic down here. And that's so they go from being addicted to heroin to being addicted to methadone, but they're in Kensington because that's where the clinic is. And then they're surrounded by all the tough stuff down there. And it's so hard to get clean. I mean, what you're saying is so amazing, so on point. And we got to help these kids, because if we don't have the safe injection homes, if we don't have methadone clinics everywhere, the kids are just going to die, because I see them die.
Yep, you certainly do. You do great work, Eddie. Hey, Eddie, thanks for the call. And
you're welcome.
I thought I was going to see you last week.
Well, you're going to. On March 11th, I'm having an event. I'm going to invite you guys, and we're going to do a presentation in front of 200 people, and we're going to hand you a check for $1,000.
I make it 20,000. We'll love you more, okay? All right, Eddie, thanks for the call. As usual, continue your great work. And it's selfless, and you don't need to do it, but you do it anyway. And that's really special.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eddie.
And he's really on the front line.
I know
so he
is. I know he is. He does good. Yeah. You know, especially when you don't need to do something and you do it anyway, and you're not in recovery, and you're not, and you're not.
Oh, yeah. It's quite the service to be doing, you know, and he's helped save a lot of lives down there.
Yeah, he certainly has. I was going to say take a break, but let's just keep going with this. Okay?
Sounds good.
Because Eddie's right. We're getting a lot of good information here. Is there anything you guys want to tell our listeners, you know, anything that's new in your industry, how you're treating? Is treatment different today than it was 3 or 4 years ago? I mean, anybody can answer.
Yes. I mean, it's always evolving, always changing. There's always a new modality. There's a new study coming out. There's always something we're trying to use to help people, especially help people with addictions. Right now, we're doing naltrexone. Mm-hmm. Naltrexone is different from methadone and Suboxone in that it's not an opiate agonist. Agonist is a fancy word for you'll feel something when you take it. So methadone, you kind of get the sensation similar to heroin, but not as strong. Same thing with Suboxone, but not as strong. With naltrexone, it acts opposite to those things. So it blocks the receptors responsible for giving you that high feeling. The idea with it, it came out first with a pill, and now it's pretty much the injection was FDA approved in 2010.
This is also good for alcohol, is that correct?
It's also good for alcohol, and that's serendipitously, they found that when they gave these people the pill for alcohol, they also stopped using it's actually backwards, excuse me. So when they designed the pill, it was for opiate use, mm-hmm. right? So obviously an opiate agonist is going to be good for stopping opiate use. What they found really wasn't that effective, but they did find that people who are using it, they stopped drinking alcohol as much. So now they use it for alcohol. It's very commonplace. The thing that's changed in 2010 is the injection. The injection is way more reliable. You basically get injection every 4 weeks. And when you get the injection, you don't have to worry about taking a pill every day or anything like that, which is often the problem. Because you imagine if you have a habit and you enjoy getting high, and you're just going to stop taking the pill. That's often the problem.
That's for sure.
That's the problem. Yeah. So with the injection, you get the injection once a month or every 4 weeks. And then you get another injection, you don't have to worry about it. The problem there is, you know, will you come back in 4 weeks? And that's what we offer. So with Rehab After Work, you're inoculated in a program, you have a counselor, you have a psychiatrist, so you're in the system for us to help you, versus you're not just coming in for a shot. You have to see a counselor, you have to do therapy and things like that to help. Because it's not just, there's no magic bullet. If naltrexone alone or methadone or any of these things alone were helpful, we wouldn't be here right now. The problem would be solved. But it's really, it takes a village to help, you know, cure this problem. And you really have to use all avenues to find some sense of control in your life.
You know, it's so great that the medical community, including, you know, everybody that's involved in that, is seeing now that, you know, there are different techniques. It's not just one way to skin a cat. And people are willing to understand, many people are willing to understand that we need to try everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 2 years from now, it might be a totally different game plan. But for right now, it really feels to me that people are getting the best care and treatment that is available to them now, you know?
Yeah, and it's based on studies. It's you know, we look at the research and see really what works, which is extremely helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Mark, you got sober how many years ago?
15.
So I remember when I got sober 36 years ago, there was one way, and that was, you know, they had one drug for the alcohol. I forget
what. And abuse.
That was the big drug back then. There was nothing else. There was nothing else. It was just you go to meetings, and I'm still a proponent of, you know, the 12-step program and all that stuff. But there was nothing else reinforcing or assisting somebody other than meetings and therapy to get well.
Yeah, and I would totally agree. And I think, you know, Tashara would agree with me that, and Mark, and everyone in this room, that everyone that comes to our doors, we refer them to their local AA, NA, CA, MA, whatever ails them, because that really helps a lot. Because, you know, Alcohol Anonymous program is huge in that it's everywhere, it's free, and readily accessible. And everyone in that program, or most people in the program, are dedicated to the idea that you can, there's life after,
yeah,
you know, so we really couldn't do our jobs without having things like that in the community. It makes our jobs that much easier when we can refer people to organizations that we know are looking after people's best interests, and completely nonprofit. They're not really, you know, hounding people for money or anything like that. It's really just we want to, I was helped with this program, and you can be helped with this program. But we know that that alone isn't helpful. That you need, we need more than that. That there has to be more than that. And for a lot of people, because a lot of people have a lot of other issues, a lot of like psychiatric comorbidities, health comorbidities, and things like that. So there is no magic bullet. Because if it was just NA or AA that was effective, that there wouldn't be a problem. Because that's been around for years, since, you know, turn of the century.
You know, and with all the press and everything about what's going on now, it's incredible to be able to show that there are many successes in recovery. And the communities need to see, hey, we do this, and the outcome is a productive person in good health who is contributes. And the only way is the history of this, is to show people do get well.
And I'll tell you, the people I've seen that I've prescribed Suboxone, Naltrexone, or Methadone, the change has been dramatic. So they go from, you know, basically living on the streets, dollar to dollar, trying to get high, to having jobs, maintaining steady employment, getting custody of their kids back, and doing all these great things, where before it was a dream. They really couldn't do anything because their whole life revolved around getting high. So having these programs in the community is essential.
Yeah. Guys, we're coming up to the hour. Can't thank you enough. Doctor?
Thank you.
Campbell, thank you so very much. Tish, Deese?
Yes.
I won't forget your last name. Thank you so much, Mark, as usual. Rehab After Work, an incredible resource for our community in the Philadelphia area. And one of the benefits is we can have fun in recovery. So what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to hang out with my family. We're actually looking at a couple houses on Sunday. Going to lay low. If you don't mind, I was going to give our number out real quick.
Go, give it out.
1-800-238-HELP. That's 1-800-238-4357. Give us a call and we'll set you up, get you in for an evaluation.
Thank you very much. Hey, Brad, thank you so much for being the techie today. Brett, as usual, thanks for producing the show. Everybody have a clean and sober weekend, and we'll see you next week on WWDB AM 860.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
The dust of